Welcome back to the Green Front, and we were hoping to get someone back from the Brookings Institution on to talk about this new research that shows the public understanding of climate science is beginning to rebound, or continuing to rebound, we should say, with some 72% of independents saying there is solid evidence of climate change, and that is up from 52% a year ago. Among Republicans, it's up to 42%. Actually, it was 42% a year ago, so even with all the extreme weather we have had, they have not seen a rise, but 42%, well, I guess that's better than nothing. It is lower, though, than it was in the fall of 2011 for Republicans who believe that these extreme climactic events are related to climate change. Among Democrats, it's solid rise. A year ago, it was 73% of registered Democrats saying they believe climate change is a real and present threat. During the fall of 2011, it was up to 78%, now up to 81%. So that averages out, I think, to about 72% of Americans, and so that's good news. The bad news is it's we're not doing enough about it, and the politicians, especially the progressive politicians, not really taking advantage of this to make sure that there's policy, that make sure the media talks about this more. Most notably, we wish our president would give a State of the Climate address instead of just a State of the Union, because, of course, there is no union on a dying planet with an unstable climate, or at least not one most of us would want to be part of. I'm very happy to say Geneva Boyer is part of the show again today. She was with us last week, if you happen to listen live, but due to an unfortunate technical glitch in the studio, she was not recorded, and she's just too good to not have in our archives, and most people listen to us after the fact, so wanted to thank her for coming back with us and talking once again about her work and her incredible poetry aimed at most recently President Obama, speaking of him. Welcome back to the Green Front, Geneva.
Hi.
Hi. So, yes, we are thrilled to have you back. You are, really our hero of the moment, and it's because of your poetry, but also your comments that you shared with us, and we'll share again, I'm sure. Let's begin, if we can, by playing this YouTube clip of you reading your poem quite dramatically that you've just written and are presenting to the president with the upcoming election in mind.
Okay, sounds good.
As the election approaches, if you're feeling some doubt, if you don't feel invested, think you'll sit this one out. If you think it won't matter if you don't even try, think your life can go on if you turn a blind eye, I ask you to consider what abstaining will do. But withholding your power brings America too. Cause if you care at all about soldiers at war, about Americans dying on far distant shores, your inaction could let someone keep them away. Why not work for a man who brings them home to stay? And reunites families who waited each night, praying for news that their kids were all right, because Obama returned them just as he said. Iraq's finally over. We can now look ahead. And if you think women's rights is a topic of rape, that my self-determination isn't up for debate, then I just couldn't see you not fighting the man who won't admit it's insane to start a birth control ban, who thinks that my uterus is state business, not mine, that my rights to my body are for him to define. But Obama knows better. He supports us each day. He proved he was with us when he signed equal pay. And if you claim that climate change matters to you, that human survival isn't something to skew, since you know what will happen if you choose not to act, know the droughts and the hunger, that there's no turning back, then I can't understand how you sit by at will when the opponent's campaign line is drill, baby, drill. You give 2 cents about equal rights, then it just stands to reason you would stand up and fight. Because how could you bear it to see couples in love who cling to each other, much as made from above, not be treated as equal, not be treated as one, live as second-class citizens, let their vows be undone, because separate's not equal. It wasn't then, it's not now. People love whom they love, and they can't be told how. But Obama's been there for the LGBT cause. No more don't ask, don't tell. Give the man some applause. does affordable health care strike you as for? Just the rich and the healthy, not the sick or the poor? If not, you should reject wanting to take it away. We'd say the right to survive is for those who can pay, and a mother who clutches her son to her breast, never leaving his side, never taking a rest. She'd not just assume her insurance is there. This pre-existing condition is her charge to bear. And the thousands who die from no coverage each year should blame only themselves. Don't you think that that's clear? Well, the president didn't. He thought we were due affordable coverage so we could see our days through. And his Affordable Care Act brought that about. It's a big effing deal. It's okay to freak out. So look at the candidates, and I know you'll agree. Supporting Obama is urgent and key, but voting this year is just not enough. The stakes are too high. The game is too rough. So we can't only vote. We must stand up and fight. We mustn't sit back. We can't cede to the right. I know you're aware of the power you hold. You've seen it in action. You don't need to be told that you are the difference. You still make the change. That your sweat and your passion don't have an exchange. So let's stand together and send a message that's clear. We are taking Obama to office this year.
Beautiful. And I'm going to have you read your climate change poem in just a moment. But let's first go back, Geneva, and tell us how, at the age of 9, I believe, you started reading 50 Simple Things Kids Can Do to Save the Earth, or perhaps your activism, your awareness of the need for activism on the environmental front started before then.
It started around age 9. That was in 2000 during the Bush-Gore election. And it was a wake-up because I definitely cared about a lot of issues throughout my whole life, and I've always felt that presidential elections were a great thing to work on because all of these different social justice issues come together, and you can fight for them all at once. And it was just opened my eyes. I turned off Britney Spears and started listening to NPR, which is a pretty big step for a 9-year-old.
Oh, if only every 9 to 19-year-old would do that, not to mention adults.
Go ahead. Yeah. So then after that, when we quote-unquote lost, that was very upsetting for me. But I realized just because we lost one election doesn't mean there's not still a huge amount of incredibly important things going on in the world that we need to fight for. And I was still very drawn to areas where many social justice issues came together, which, of course, is climate change, is a very, very major one where a lot of different things, genocide, global health, hunger, you name it. And I got very involved in that. And, yes, I started reading 50 Simple Things Kids Can Do to Save the Earth.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things you can do is give your climate poem at conventions like the National Wildlife Federation. I understand one of their publications had an impact on you when you were young as well.
Yes, I read Ranger Rick and My Big Backyard when I was growing up. And my mother had also read Ranger Rick when she was growing up. And I grew up in an artist live work group, and there was outside where I lived was a big cliff, and I just spent a lot of my childhood running around, getting in all sorts of trouble outside.
Well, we're hoping you'll cause more trouble now that you're a college student. What are you studying at Brandeis?
Well, I am planning to declare an independent major in social decision science, which is basically how people make decisions and how to influence the decisions they make. Because decisions are such an important part of changing our world, how people decide what's important, how they decide whether to act or not. If they decide, you know, maybe I shouldn't just be sitting on my sofa right now. I really need to stand up if I want the world to be anything like what it was when I was young.
And your poems are on video on YouTube if anyone wants to see them. But maybe you could take a moment now and read us the one that you wrote a year or two ago and actually read in person to Vice President Al Gore at the Energy Youth Summit in 2010, I believe it was.
That was 2011, but yes. Okay, so this is Call to Action. Well, aren't you lucky if you can still say, you don't mind climate change, you can live for today, because unseasonable weather may be all you've been through. So while the climate is changing, it's not yet bad for you. So what do you care if in Asia the tide is rising and flooding and children have died because nothing will grow in dirt full of salt? So their lives are ruined, but it's our nation's fault. And what difference is there if birds that have flown down south for the winter find they don't have a home because trees that once grew there can no longer thrive? And now it's not clear if these birds will survive. And worsening hurricanes, don't you think we should care? Or do you believe if they're poor, then it's fair? And who gives a hoot that when rivers stop flowing, when rain season stops coming, when the crops stop from growing, that this setup brings conflict? I swear you can time it. The genocide in Darfur, yeah, you betcha that's climate. And what's the big deal? Pollen season's extended, and many children with asthma cannot breathe unattended. And why does it matter that the ocean's acidic, that the coral is dying from the carbon we give it? Global warming is not coming, it's already here. But don't think for a second we've got nothing to fear, because while the chaos may now happen so far away, it will be here tomorrow. If we don't act today, the time is upon us. We owe it to all. We must lead on climate. We must heed the call.
I love hearing it yet again. And what was the former vice president's response, Mr. Gore, when he heard you read that face-to-face?
I actually have a recording of it on mine. He sort of said, wow, in his very deep Al Gore voice. And I was told by National Wildlife Federation President Meyer Schweiger that when he talked to his friend Al later,
his
Al Gore
Al.
Said,
uh-huh.
"Yeah," he said that, "Wow, I didn't know Ranger Rick had teeth." Ranger Rick being the mascot is a raccoon. So,
okay. So, what do you think about the fact that? I don't know if you heard this, but this floors me, and since we spoke last week, this came to my attention. Research that shows that only 1% of all news coverage is about what's happening with our environment, and that's climate change, oceans, species, diversity, energy, you name it, 1%. I mean, in a way, that's not surprising, given what those of us who pay attention don't see in mainstream media every day, and yet that same study showed that some 79%, let's call it 80%, of Americans would like to see better and more frequent and deeper and wider coverage of our many pressing, complicated environmental issues. How does that strike you? Does it surprise and anger you as it does me? I mean, I didn't know it was even that bad. I knew it was bad, but, you know, I can't possibly, none of us can consume all media. I thought there must be more out there that I'm just missing. But 1%, and that's, by the way, the same ratio as the celebrity coverage, which actually surprised me. I would have thought that was even higher, more like 10%, because that's what I seem to see a lot of. Maybe that's what's on in my house because I have a teenager living here. As much as it drives me crazy, she usually has control of the television.
Yes. Well, it surprises me more that it's only 1% celebrity, given the prevalence of infotainment today. I would say I think there have been efforts to address these news media outlets and say, look, you really need to cover this stuff. This is critical to our world. But I would say those haven't necessarily been going about it in a way that would be most effective. I think there's definitely a need to target the advertisers for these media outlets, because ultimately they are very much the media outlets are very much controlled by their advertisers. Like Coca-Cola will stipulate that they do not want their advertisement next to an article about the prevalence of diabetes in young America. And so they have so much control this way that it can really shape what is covered and what isn't. So if we got, obviously Coke Industries is probably not going to sign up, but if we targeted these companies and say, look, why don't you stipulate that you want it to be next to stuff that talks about climate change, that is, because it's so critical.
And all those, yeah.
Yeah.
And while those companies that would, you know, support a greener message getting out there are too far and few between, you know, we're not going to see the coal folks and Exxon, you know, sponsor anything green at all, unless they're really actively trying to greenwash, which, you know, sometimes does happen, as bold and outrageous as that is. We need the greener companies to step up and support greener programming. I think we're not going to see it happen.
We can use greenwash in our favor in this case. Certainly a lot of companies will say, oh, we are 77% greener, and it's like, well, 77% greener than what? Than pure bleach. So they have those claims in order for them to seem greener, and this would be a great way for them to say, look, we are on board, we're spreading awareness in an actual meaningful way. They don't have to change their product, they don't have to lose funds, which I know is so important in our industry. So.
Well, you remind me of me. 15 years ago, Geneva, when I was trying to get sponsors for my little trash talk minutes, and I would go to all the green recycling conferences, zero waste conferences, and go up to the companies represented there and say, this is great, but how about telling the rest of America that this is something you value as a corporation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, HP, Starbucks, Sony, and I would hear, we don't like to talk about it, we don't like to bring attention to ourselves, and they were concerned about being accused of greenwashing, I guess, or didn't want to spend the money to really support, you know, green tips getting out there, heaven forbid. And I said, it's not about, you know, being perfect. It's saying, you know, this is something we value as a corporation, sustainability, and we're taking steps as a company to be greener. And that's really all you need to say. But I'm sad to say, you know, more than a dozen years later, I still don't see those kinds of sponsorships and advertisements supporting enough green content. I mean, maybe there's less. It just seems like it's a real, obviously, huge imbalance compared to those slick ads that we see for, you know, clean coal, et cetera.
Yeah. But
natural gas and oil.
There's room to have these companies take meaningful actions rather than saying, like, oh, our cap is a little bit smaller, or because you do see many, many products with, like, leaves on them and just green stamps, because they are very interested in catching on to this trend as they see it. So why not have them catch on to it in a way that makes a difference.
Do you think part of the reason that, let me ask you, what do you think your generation is doing? And I know it's hard to generalize about a generation, but it seems my fellow baby boomers, my peers, are just sort of tuning out. It's either too much, too complicated. They figure your generation will figure out this mess that we've helped create. How do you engage people by, you know, giving them, you know, as much inspiration as there is desperation once this kinds of information and these trends that we talk about on the show all the time really start seeping into people's consciousness? I mean, I look at young people, I look at pregnant women and, you know, with their children, and I feel sadness that, you know, what are they living into, and what are we doing and not doing to at least begin to turn the ship? And I just wonder, you know, if it's something that you find, if you're not starting the conversation, do you hear your fellow teens and college students talking about climate change and these other eco-challenges?
Well, I go to a liberal arts college, and certainly there is a much higher awareness in liberal arts colleges. But I do think that generally my generation is more aware of social justice type issues and more open. I think a good example of that is LGBT equality. The people under 25 are much, much more supportive of LGBT rights than the older generation. And I would assume, I mean, you should never assume, but I would assume that would hold true through many issues. We have a more open mind. We're willing to accept more things just from being younger and from growing up in this era. That said, I do try to start these conversations, and I'm generally met with when I talk to people who are not also activists, they do sound like they care. Something I do get a lot of is a lot of people being like, "Wow, climate change is really bad. Like I know it's a problem," but then you tell them like something about how extreme it is, and they think that's ridiculous. So I actually, my freshman year in college, I told them about the point of their return and how close we are to that, and how Jim Sanson says there's just a few years left, if that. And every time I started freaking out about the climate, they're like, ooh, 7 years, Geneva, 7 years, Geneva. And it's just, it's, It's not that they don't believe in it. It's sort of like not believing in Alaska. They know it's real, but they are unaware of how extreme it is. And I think that ties back into the media and how the coverage is not anything like what it should be.
I know. We and our likes get, you know, we're, you know, Cassandras, we're alarmists, we're crazy, we're, you know, pessimists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually the opposite. I contend that, you know, activists of all stripes, especially green stripes, we wake up every day and we feel hopeful and optimism that we can make a difference or we wouldn't keep doing it, I suppose. And yet it's not easy being green, harder than ever, because of denial, which is, I guess, a pretty well-entrenched psychological, sociological phenomenon.
And I do think the reaction that people have to climate change and to issues of this import and it's not necessarily a fight reaction. I think people do have the traditional fight or flight reaction, and so either they're going to go out and be like, I need to stop this, or they're sort of withdraw. And I saw a quote on Twitter the other day, which was, withdrawing in disgust is not the same as apathy. Some people can't face it, and it's just so upsetting. But I do think we need to have everybody have this reaction, and whether it's fight or flight, they need to be brought to the point where they're going to choose. And I think so much of America just does not realize what's going on.
I concur completely. You really have used art in several beautiful ways. In addition to your poetry, you're also, is it a painter?
More drawing, but yes, I do. I grew up, my dad is an abstract painter. My maternal grandfather is also an abstract painter, and my mother is an arts manager. So there was little hope for escape from the arts world for me.
And so you use words to help paint the picture, fill in the picture for those. So I'm so glad you're out there doing what you are and can only imagine what's ahead for you. I hope you have a larger crowd behind you than some of us. I mean, there's been environmental activists, you know, for decades, but this climate challenge is just a whole new animal altogether. So maybe together we can unite our voices and wake up your generation, my generation, and just have people tune in. You know, what gets me, and you probably agree, is if you're not simple and quick, you know, solutions or you know, challenges or that anybody can really feel like we can take on alone. But together, we've got a shot, and not addressing them ironically will make things even worse. So for those who don't like bad news, you know, that's the irony, right?
Yep.
Tragic irony. And yet, we just need to, I think, empower each other and really find a platform to get up and just shout that at least, you know, no one should be ignorant. You know, we can't make people do things, but we can at least make sure that most, if not all, Americans have the dots connected. And so we can then begin to, you know, tap into the American ingenuity and innovation and brain power to address these issues. While as long as we're marginalized or invisibilized, it just seems like it's too daunting. I'm sure you agree.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Geneva. Didn't mean to cut you off, but I hear they're playing our song. So I want to thank you again for joining us on the Green Front for a return appearance. And we will get this is recorded this time, I'm sure. So we'll have you down in our archives. And if anyone is listening to the show, just tuned in partway. The archives are both at the Progressive Radio Network's website, also at mine, and that is at thegreenfront.com. In the meantime, till next week, have a great Green Week.